So I do thank you all for being here on this beautiful Chicago afternoon. You could be in so many different places, right? But I do believe that by gathering here, we are all making a difference, and we're having these relevant conversations. And these days, there is so much animosity out there. There are voices that are being silenced just because they don't agree with everything that someone else, how don't agree with everyone else's views. And these conventions and political parties, they're stating that their sole purpose is to defeat the other side, the other party, the other issue. I forgot what leading looked like for a little bit. And how about making your sole purpose to actually make your community a little bit better, right? And doing something to change for the good in Chicago, in the state, and hopefully for society. And we don't need to agree on everything to be able to do that and to be able to have those conversations, right? Thank you. And I say all this because that's what we're doing here at City Club, and that's what we're committed to doing more of, is having more of these relevant conversations by convening all of you here who are leading and who are doing good things to move our city, our state, and our society forward. And here at City Club, we're doing our small part to help you all do that. So there's plenty more to come, plenty more conversations to come. I hope you'll join us for all of them. Again, we may not agree on all of them, but it will be a very interesting, robust dialogue that will be continued. So let's have another positive, forward-thinking conversation today that will perhaps prompt some more discussion and hopefully a little bit of action. Does that sound good? Great. So many great leaders here today, and I'm going to start by introducing today's moderator, State Senator Lakeisa Collins. She hails from Chicago and represents the 5th District. Joining the senator for today's program is Sarah Garza Resnick, President and CEO of Personal Pack. Megan Jafo, Executive Director of the Chicago Abortion Fund. Dr. Jonah Fleischer, Medical Director of the Center for Reproductive Health for UI Health. And Chelsea Suter, who made the trip up from Granite City, Illinois, where she is a co-owner of Hope Clinic. Please welcome everyone to the stage. Get your questions ready, and come on up and please enjoy the conversation. Thanks for being here at City Club.
All righty. Good afternoon. Oh, come on now. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We have a very powerful panel here today. Thank you to City Club for having us here today. And it seems like there's a lot of senators in the building. So welcome. So y'all can clap for the senators. In the house. So here today we have two independent providers, because the majority of abortions are done at independent clinics. We have the executive director of the largest abortion fund in the Midwest and one of the largest in the country. We also have here a colleague of mine, a friend, and a fierce advocate, the CEO of the Illinois Reproductive Rights Political Action Committee, and we're all working here together in the state of Illinois. In Illinois, we have done so much work to create the strongest possible protections for ourselves. Like this year, we passed one of the most historic pieces of legislation, House Bill 5142, spearheaded by my colleague in the House, Leader Robin Gable, and myself. It's the Birth Equity Initiative, or other important pieces of legislation like the RNA and the RHA. We've made the state of Illinois a place where reproductive rights are protected, and we've done so much to expand the capacity of our abortion providers, but we have a long road ahead of us, and we have to deepen our conversations and connections in order to do that. So we're going to dive right into our panel, because time is not on our side right now. So please, question number one. please tell us how your organization has evolved over the past few years and how you're meeting the public health crisis that we're facing? And we can start with Megan, please.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having us. We're really thrilled to be able to talk about our collective work today. So I represent the Chicago Abortion Fund. We will celebrate 40 years in existence next year. Showcases how long this work has been needed. We're Illinois' statewide abortion fund, and we support people from and traveling to Illinois and around the Midwest. We connect our callers to care by any means necessary. We do this through a really novel, I think, individualized case management model. We pay for people's appointments and whatever is needed to actually get them to that care. Flights, hotel stays, meals. We provide child care stipends and in-person child care in Chicago as well. We have no eligibility requirements or means testing, and we have been able to support 100% of our callers since July of 2019. So that is almost 5 years. And that is despite drastic increases in both volume and complexity as we've been navigating the post-Dobbs landscape. Since Dobbs, we've spent close to $7 million in direct service alone, up from just $200,000 in 2019. 5 years ago, we supported less than 200 people a year, and now we hear from and attempt to support between 200 and 300 people a week. Now that 41 states ban abortion at some point in pregnancy and 12 states have completely banned abortion, we're helping more than 12,000 patients annually from over 40 states to access care in Chicago, Illinois, and around the Midwest.
Sarah, would you like to go next?
Yeah, so good afternoon, everyone. Illinois is often referred to in the media and by our elected officials as an oasis for reproductive health care. And we are. But we are an oasis for a very good reason. Because we worked really hard to make it so. It was intentional action that made Illinois the place that we see on the map today. Personal PAC was founded in 1978 by a Republican woman. We are a bipartisan organization. We used to have 13 Republican General Assembly members. Unfortunately, we now have zero. And we have been electing pro-choice, 100% pro-choice, no exceptions, elected officials, many of them who are in this room, for over 35 years. And we helped pass HB 40 and the RHA and the repeal of parental notification, all things that allow the map behind you to be reality. Mm-hmm. But since Dobbs, the United States Supreme Court threw us into chaos, and we are now at the local level. So personal PAC is in the halls of city councils all over this state, in school board elections, in county board elections, and we will be there with all of your support to fight the anti-choice movement every step of the way.
Thank you for that, Sarah. Dr. Jonah Fletcher, can you explain to us what you do in your line of work and how are you addressing this crisis?
Absolutely. I'm grateful for the opportunity. I'm an OBGYN, and I specialize in a field called complex family planning, which means that I've done extra training in abortion, miscarriage, and contraception care. And, you know, as I want to, I should start by saying I'm not here on behalf of UI Health. I do work at UI Health or on behalf of UIC. But as an abortion provider in a hospital setting, my job has changed dramatically in the last couple of years. My job is to care for the full range of people seeking abortion care, including those with medical problems that make that care a lot more complex and, frankly, less safe. We, since Dobbs, started seeing, it was happening before Dobbs, but even more so afterwards, patients traveling to Illinois, going to a, you know, an independent abortion clinic, and discovering that their blood pressure was so high, or their placenta was in the wrong location, or something was the matter where it wasn't the safest plan to get an abortion in an outpatient clinic. And they would call us from the parking lot going, they would be sitting in the parking lot not knowing where to go, saying, who do I call, what do I do? They had a list of four hospitals all in Chicago that would be able to care for them, but they didn't know when, they didn't know, and I'm sure Megan can speak more to some of those barriers. And so, you know, within our hospital, we scaled up a lot of the ways that independent clinics did by hiring more staff and adding more appointments. But on a systems level, I'm here also as the co-director of a program called CARLA, which is the Complex Abortion Regional Line for Access. This is a statewide program that helps connect folks like that in the parking lot to hospital-based care quickly, efficiently, and as painlessly as possible. It helps. Our goal is to, with one phone call, be able to help that patient understand where they're going to eat and sleep that night, how they're going to pay for it, and when their next hospital appointment is, and what, if anything, medically they need to do to get ready for it. We couldn't do that work at all without our partners in Chicago Abortion Fund, but it takes a lot more hands than that, given all the complexities of hospitals and the medical care that needs to happen. I think the fact that, you know, we went live in August of last year, and in about the last 10 months, we've seen almost 650 referrals, which I think speaks to really how necessary and important that program is. That's how my practice has changed.
Thank you, Dr. Chelsea, can you tell us how your organization has evolved?
Yeah, Hope Clinic is the oldest independent abortion clinic in Illinois. I'm leaving here to go to our clinic and celebrate our 50th anniversary this weekend. Very excited. And for many decades, we were the only abortion clinic south of Springfield in southern Illinois. And we saw mostly folks that were coming from Illinois. That really started to shift in 2019 when Missouri was down to one abortion clinic that really wasn't able to really provide abortions much at all. We saw a large shift then begin to change sort of the landscape and who we were seeing in southern Illinois. And a lot of our patients became, of course, Missourians. And then, as many of you know, 2021 shifted again, and a lot of our patients became Texans and Oklahomans. And it kind of just kept trickling from there until the Dobbs decision came. And last year alone, we have more than doubled our patient volume in the last 2 years since before Dobbs. And we saw people last year from 28 different states and 5 different countries. And we've seen about a 300% increase of people coming to our clinic that are not from Missouri or Illinois, which used to be sort of our patient population region typically. Independent clinics essentially are standalone clinics most often, or providers. We work collectively with abortion funds, like Chicago Abortion Fund is a great partner. We work with the CARLA program to get patients that specialized care. We work with other clinics like FPA in Chicago, Planned Parenthood in the state, to be able to collectively make sure that folks get the access they need. I think it's important to realize that independent clinics only make up about a quarter of the clinics in this country, but they're providing more than half of all of the abortions that happen here. And specifically when we start talking about abortions in the second trimester, independent clinics provide over three quarters of those across this country. And I think that's important for me just to mention, as we've seen, especially since the Dobbs decision at our clinic, folks who are being forced to travel from a lot of these southern and midwestern states that come to us and from many other places are typically forced later in pregnancy than they would like to be, right? And so we've already seen since Dobbs about a 2.5-fold increase in folks who are over 20 weeks in pregnancy due to the delays that they're all facing. So, yeah, that's kind of where we're at right now.
Thank you. So, Sarah, I think you touched on this just a little bit, but anyone can answer this, but we'll start with you. Other than voting, what can people in this room do to support abortion care here in Illinois?
It's a great question. So I'm not very fun to talk to anymore at parties. There is no federal fix coming for this problem. In the best case scenario, in January, we are celebrating Joe Biden's inauguration again. And I hope with my whole heart that that happens. But even if that happens, Illinois is going to be like this for many years to come because of gerrymandering. because of messed up campaign finance laws, because of voter suppression, because of gerrymandering at the state legislatures that are banning abortion all over this country, Illinois must stay this way. And so we are here today, and our big ask for you is get creative. Think about what it's like for the callers that have to call into CAF. What do they need? And CAF needs our help. They need to figure out how we're going to use trains, planes, automobiles, Ubers, Lyfts, food, childcare. Over 37,000 people were forced to come here last year. They're medical refugees. And that is before Florida fell. If just a quarter of those people who were receiving care in Florida come here, that is 1,700 more procedures a month. And I am talking about years. There is no one coming to save us. So if you say you're pro-choice and you vote that way and you donate to all of us, get creative. Who do you know in the airline industry? Who do you know who knows something about trains? Who do you know that controls a lot of hotels? Who do you know at Lyft and Uber who can help us? This is an all-hands-on-deck emergency. We are in the midst of a public health crisis that is only going to get worse. So get creative. And come and talk to us. Like, literally call me anytime, any day. I'll probably be at a baseball game watching my kids if I'm not working. But, like, I will talk about this at any time. And then my final ask is, say the word abortion. Almost 70% of Americans think abortion should be legal now, and it is because of the brave pregnant people that have told their stories, like myself. I had an abortion in my early 20s, and I would not be the person I am today if I hadn't have had it. I would not be the mother I am today if I had had that abortion. So get creative, bring your ideas, and talk about abortion.
Thank you, Sarah. So, Megan, being over one of the most largest, impactful organizations in the Midwest and across the country, what can we do besides voting to get involved and get active?
Yeah, I love what Sarah said just about being creative. And, like, prepping for this, I was, I guess, reacquainting myself with all of the very wild strategies the right has tried over the last 5 years to curb access to abortion. We have Indiana, we have a DA who wants to make abortion reports, medical records, what he calls abortion reports, public. We have Tennessee, folks in Tennessee wanting to criminalize people who are helping young people leave the state, which means that we could be criminalized for our work. Missouri does criminalize people who help young people leave the state. When we get a young person who calls us from Missouri, we have to figure out how we can not break the law in getting them the care that they need. We have Louisiana criminalizing the having a medication abortion on your person. We have SB 8 in Texas. They are trying all kinds of things, and we aren't. We are not trying things. Abortion funds are holding up this safety net. This number of how many people are coming here is mind-boggling. And what people are being forced to endure when they come here, I'm talking people driving for 11 hours with children in the car, okay, that don't know that abortion funds could help them, that they even exist. I get calls at Family Planning Associates saying, This young mother showed up with her two-year-old. Can you come get the baby so she can have her appointment? Mm-hmm. That is not an irregular occurrence. So what we are doing is barbaric. What we are forcing people to endure is barbaric, and we have to, as Sarah said, talk about it, talk about who has abortions. The majority of people who have abortions are parents. They are parents. This is a family issue, and when you deny a parent a wanted abortion, you are forcing them into economic instability.
I got you.
You know, but I think about my own children and what it takes for me just to, like, get them from point A to B. It's summer. We're talking about summer. Our kids, you know, these are people who are summer vacation. Let's go to Chicago and have an abortion. That's what we're forcing people to do. It is barbaric. So we need to be as creative as they are. We need to throw every level of government needs to be thinking about this. And in Illinois, we have a responsibility to the people, not just our neighbors, but around the country. This is our responsibility to care for people. And we need to think about how far we're willing to go to do that.
So in Illinois is a very protective state for abortion access. But what happens in other states impact us here? I'm going to open this up to everybody. Can you talk about the ripple effect on these bans that are happening all across outside of Illinois and how that would impact us here? It's open for anyone to answer.
I'll start. Like, who goes? Well, I already mentioned earlier, and you can see by the sheer numbers of the people that are being forced to travel, I think it's also important to remember when we talk about all of the things that it takes to get people here from all these other states, there's also going to be tens of thousands of people who never make it and who are forced into pregnancy and parenting or death or all the things that come along with being pregnant and birthing in this country. So I just always like to say that because the reality is folks who have the means and the money, especially affluent white folks, are going to be able to get abortions in this country no matter what. But the folks who are the most marginalized are the ones who are being most affected by these restrictions and these bans. At Hope Clinic specifically, we actually did a research study leading into Dobbs to really, one of our fellows did, not me, to kind of look at how far people are traveling, right? And so we took zip codes and we wanted to see where people were coming from and how far was that travel. And we saw alone since Dobbs' decision came down that there was an over 750% increase in patients who had to travel at least 250 miles one way. And for Southern Illinois specifically, most of our patients are driving or coming in on like a bus or a train. We don't have as many folks who fly in typically as I think they do in Chicago. And as Megan said, many of them are coming from places, you know, where they're afraid of criminalization. They're coming with children, trying to navigate that process, that far travel, oftentimes coming alone with children, not having any support systems, typically telling us they're never going to speak of this experience outside of the clinic. So understanding sort of that, I think also there's been, as I referenced earlier, a lot of delays in care. So people being able to access their care in a timely manner, and obviously pregnancy is very timely. I can think back to sometime in late 22, after the Dobbs decision came down, when I was in a room with a patient who was coming from Texas, who talked to me for a very long time and explained the hoops that she had to jump through to be able to get to us. And she found out she was pregnant very quickly after missing her period, could not be seen in Texas due to SB8, and was able to make an appointment in another southern state. What happened was she sat in that parking lot for that appointment on the day the Dobbs decision came down, waiting for the clinic to open. And they had to call her because they had a trigger ban and tell her, we can't see you, even though she trekked many, many hours and miles to them. And it took her many weeks to navigate, where can I go? Now how do I pay for it? She was a fairly young person, and I remember her sitting there crying with me, telling me all these things, going from 4 weeks to 20 weeks pregnant, when she should have been able to access the care 16 weeks prior. And she wasn't even crying for herself. She was actually crying because she said to me, I'm just thinking about all the people who will never make it to this spot right now because I know how hard it is now that I had to do it. So I think really understanding what people are going through and these barriers and obstacles are insurmountable for way too many people. I think also specifically in Southern Illinois, we have this great CARLA program in Chicago, but since Dobbs has come down and many of the restrictions in Missouri, for example, we have nowhere to send people except for Chicago when they're medically complicated. And yes, it is like 4 hours from us for a drive, but when someone has already organized their entire life to get to you today, it's really hard to then try to coordinate and send them to another place, right? And they've got to move all these things around. We're really grateful for the CARLA Project because it's a one-stop shop and they do it all with CAF. But also, CARLA is the only hospital-based system in the Midwest. So So there's really nowhere else for people to go. I'm based in Omaha, Nebraska, and I found an abortion fund there as well, and we're constantly sending people from Omaha or from rural Nebraska to Chicago for hospital-based care because there's just nowhere else to go. Too many hospitals, as you can tell, are turning people away because they're too afraid to treat people when they need the help. I feel like I will ramble forever, so I'm going to just stop right there.
I can just add one thing that I think is on my mind with the election year, that as we're, you know, talking about legality and restoring Roe, and people have these, you know, banners behind them that say restore Roe. Again, Chicago Abortion Fund, 40 years. Roe was never enough. We need so much more. And being that it's an election year and we're approaching the Dobbs anniversary, and we have ballot initiatives and people really excited about states that are now in play, donations to abortion funds are dropping. Mm-hmm. The restrictions are still there. They're getting worse. May 1st, as Sarah mentioned, we have Florida now. And I don't think people understand how much Florida is impacting clinics like Hope, clinics in Chicago. We're not just seeing Floridians. Florida had the second highest increase in people traveling to it for abortion next to Illinois. So when you look at the map, we have a robust infrastructure, we have incredible providers, we have the CARLA program, we have resilient abortion funds. We've created these conditions for people to come here, and we need to make sure we sustain them and not just fund ballot initiatives and fund the election, fund people so they can get their abortions while this figures itself out, because it's going to be a long time, and we're doing it on the backs of people who don't want to be pregnant. Mm.
Someone else want to jump in?
I can't second what Chelsea and Megan just said any more strongly, but I will add, from a physician point of view, I think what happens in other states impacts us in other ways, too. It's not just patients that cross state borders. Doctors do. Mm. After Idaho's six-week ban went into effect, they lost about 1 in 5 of their OBGYNs who traveled out of state just in the first 15 months afterwards. Abortion training makes better doctors, regardless of their specialty, and we know this. Abortion helps us learn about miscarriage and contraception and other kinds of adjacent care. It's also been shown to increase empathy and professionalism. So regardless of the specialty, personally, I believe that's very important to a medical student and a graduate in graduate medical education and residency. If they're not getting that training, that means they're not getting all the education that they probably should. And that's also that's borne out in the fact that every state that's had an abortion ban has shown a decrease in applications for OBGYN residencies in that state. Students and residents know this. 40% of the Illinois physician workforce didn't train here. So nearly half of our physicians trained somewhere else. And so it's going to impact us, I think, quite directly in not too long, that physicians are coming from other places and may be lacking this core. Because if you can't learn about this care in the state where you're training, it matters.
So just politically, I wanted to touch on how bans in other states is impacting Illinois. And we're seeing this all over Illinois now. The protesters that were once in other states who no longer have abortion clinics are coming here. Just last week, we were in the Chicago City Council creating a protective noise barrier around Family Planning Associates, which is walking distance from here. And on every Saturday is inundated, sometimes by hundreds of protesters putting large microphones and amplification devices next to the buildings, so much so that the doctors inside cannot speak to their patients. We have had to be in Danville, Illinois, because the people from Texas, who were the key leaders to pass SB 8, are up there trying to say that Illinois is violating federal law, which we're not. We are at school board races because the parents' rights movement is trying to take students' ability to learn about age-appropriate comprehensive sexual education away. We now have to be everywhere. It is no longer enough for us to protect our General Assembly and the governor and the AG and the treasurer. We must be everywhere.
Thank you for that, Sarah. Oof, that is a lot. I mean, I don't want you all to be in here, you know, sad, but it's urgent. This is urgency. It's a calling. Oh, my God. So it's June, and the Supreme Court is issuing decisions now. So the Supreme Court, right, we just got to lighten up the mood just a little bit, because we did a lot of exciting things here in Illinois. They're there until they, like, you know, until they're out of there, right? Oh, my God. This is why it's so important to go and vote. We cannot let that little orange monster with that little blonde wig get back in there. Oh, my God. Joe Biden. So, Monday is the anniversary of the Dobbs decision. What should we expect? The bad, the good, the ugly from the Supreme Court and beyond. And I'll open it up to our panelists to answer this final question.
Looking at Jonah.
I can start. The decision that I'm waiting for is Idaho v. United States. This is the EMTALA case. For those who don't know, EMTALA stands for Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act. It's a law that requires hospitals to provide emergency stabilizing care to patients regardless of their particular situation or ability to pay. And it's a federal law. Idaho's near total abortion ban conflicts directly with this, in part because the exceptions that they make for health and life of the pregnant person are woefully inadequate and are very, it's almost impossible to know what they mean. So importantly, this ban is a criminal ban. So it means that as a doctor, if I were in Idaho, I would say, I don't know if I can treat this woman who's hemorrhaging with, you know, a potentially viable embryo, or I might go to jail. This is also the first time, I'm sorry, that the Supreme Court has examined a state law that's criminal around abortion since Roe fell. So, you know, how is this going to affect us here? I'm not sure. We do have a law, and there are legal experts in the room far more learned than I, that will tell you we have a law in Illinois that is hopefully soon to be signed that will protect, basically codify EMTALA into Illinois law, but it's still an open question about how that will affect hospitals that are Catholic or other religious-based organizations that may challenge this in other ways. So that's what I'm waiting to hear.
I can talk a little about Miffy case. I mean, we all probably saw the decision come out, and I would say it's not really a win, although I always am grateful to celebrate in the moments where we can, you know, have something to celebrate nowadays. But it wasn't really a win because if you read the decision was based on standing, not merit. So essentially they just said the wrong people brought it to the court. Try again. Which I think is exactly what we're going to see as we've seen it kind of play out, right? The other side, I mean, you all probably know Project 2025 has laid out exactly what they want to do, and it goes way beyond abortion access, but they are creative and they are putting the right cases in front of the right judges, unfortunately, to get them the decisions that they want to have. So I think with the Miffy case specifically, although for now we are able to continue to access mifepristone, which provides over half of the abortions in this country and is extremely safe, safer than Tylenol, safer than your wisdom teeth being removed, safer than a colonoscopy. I don't know that it is forever secure, right? And so I think we expect to see some other form of this case come about and try again. And I think that, unfortunately, I mean, absolutely no trust in courts, as I'm sure nobody in this room does anymore. And I think that, you know, the decision for the Miffy case potentially in the future really could have detrimental effects on the FDA approval process and many other medications that have nothing to do with abortion. So we anticipate as a movement that we will see a reiteration of that case come back around.
I'll just end on a really depressing note. If the orange man with the blonde wig gets into the White House again, he can outlaw abortion on day one with not a single act of Congress. And people need to be talking about this. The Comstock Act is a post-Civil War law It's called a zombie law. It hasn't been enforced in many, 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 many years, but that's what they're trying to bring back. And if the orange guy puts people in the Department of Justice, which the Heritage Foundation's 2025 manifesto, go online, read it. It says that's exactly what they're going to do to enforce the Comstock Act, which not only will impact ability for people to get medication abortions, it also says that it will outlaw the transportation of any device used for an abortion. And that is on day one without a single act of Congress. Everybody must vote this November. And it will outlaw abortion even here in Illinois.
Thank you for that. So I know I said that was the final question, but it's not, because we got two more. Been very short. Is there a legal team collaborating across your organizations to help navigate new laws and new gray areas?
Well, I can speak of like our many great partners we have here in the room. We have people representing the governor's office. We have people representing the attorney general's office. We have people with the ACLU and Planned Parenthood and all of us. We are each other's keepers, and we are working collaboratively and collectively. It is so important that we stay strong. There are brilliant lawyers thinking about this. Our attorney general is part of the Democratic Association of AGs that has been instrumental and on the forefront of all of these cases, representing different states. So we're going to try and keep ahead of, you know, the other side, but they are really creative and they have been doing this for decades.
All right. Now, this is the last question before we turn it over to the audience if they have any questions. How do we stop those pop-up clinics from popping up everywhere? Back to what Alderman Bill Conway of the 34th Ward was putting out that ordinance to, you know, stop them from intimidating consumers. So
yeah,
what can we do? And everyone can just really quickly just pitch in.
There are protesters outside of abortion clinics, and then there are crisis pregnancy centers. For the protesters outside abortion clinics, they have their First Amendment right, and we honor that, to protest and say what they want to say. But we do have laws on the books here in Chicago and other places across our state. We have bubble ordinances that they can't get within a certain number of feet outside of a clinic to a patient. Those are not being enforced by our police. And one of the things that Alderman Conway and the mayor's office, where we're trying to work on, is how do we get the police to enforce the laws that are on the books? We're going to have the same exact problem with the ordinance we just passed last week. Are the police going to issue tickets that then people get civilly fined for breaking the laws that our elected officials have passed? It's a really simple question, but it's a really hard, complex thing to solve. So Personal PAC is working really hard to do that. And I will say Alderman Conway is dedicated to doing it and has been meeting with his commander in his district on a regular basis, which is the type of local grassroots work we have to be doing. On crisis pregnancy centers, those are fake clinics that trick people to all sorts of things. I won't go on and on and on. If you don't know about it, just Google it. But I will say they outnumber abortion clinics in the state of Illinois 3-1. And they are growing by the day. One just opened up on the south side last month. One is opening up next to the Planned Parenthood at Division and LaSalle. We have to be talking about this, and we have to find creative ways to stop it.
Is anybody from Google here?
Or know someone from Google?
Hear me out. COVID happened. You Googled COVID. Public health crisis. Here's where you go to get a test. Here's where you go to get treated. Here's what you do. We have advocated for Google to have something like that when it comes to abortion, because this is a public health crisis and it needs to be treated as such. So tell them to call us.
I'll also just add, if you're interested in learning a little bit more about crisis pregnancy centers and like small things that take you literally 60 seconds that you can do to try to bring them down a couple notches and expose them, if you go to exposefakeclinics.com, it's from the Abortion Access Front, which is a national organization. There's like a list of things that you can do and how to kind of educate yourself, but your community as well.
Thank you. Can we please give our panelists a round of applause? So I'm gonna open it up to the audience if you have any questions. I will ask that you announce your name and where you're from.
There are cards on your table.
These nice little blue slips. They're so pretty. They're not orange. They're blue. Blue. Don't be shy.
So oh, Jackie has a question.
Miss Jackie, do we have a microphone?
No. Oh, I'm definitely. I'm. I've never been in front of a room ever, including my own wedding. That didn't have some fundraising asked to it, so I just have to say that, like, mm-hmm. everybody here. I know you all can't pitch, but these groups are. You know, we need to be giving more and more.
I just donated $100 to Chicago Abortion.
Who's got $250? Oh, sorry,
sorry. You get a card. No, I'm just joking.
The voter project, and we give money to grassroots communities, so it's not about the top of the ticket. I think what Sarah said was really important. It doesn't, I mean, of course it matters who wins, and it doesn't matter who wins, because Project 2025 is going to move forward. I want to think that one of the things I so we just need to continue to think globally, act locally, and support people. So, the thing that I want to bring up here is that it's impossible to talk about I think abortion without talking about gender justice and how are you all working with the LGBTQ community, because we know that they're coming for our, especially our trans youth.
Yeah, I mean, so we work in partnership with Equality Illinois on almost everything we do. Mike is here from them. Thank you so much, Mike, for coming. Not only legally do our rights, women's rights and pregnant people's rights and the LGBTQ rights all come from the same place in the Constitution, but they're coming for us because what do free people, free women, free pregnant people, free LGBTQ plus people scare people? Right? And what is abortion? And the two movements have been linked, you know, for so many decades, and we've learned so much from each other. But I think about the great movement that has happened since Dobbs of brave people coming forward with their abortion stories. Very much mirrors what happened in the queer community. It was people saying, people coming out and being brave, and then people say, oh, well, my cousin is gay. Or, you know, my coworker is, and it's not scary, and we shouldn't be ashamed of it, because the other side has won because they've made us feel like we can't talk about it, that we can't be proud about our lives and who we are. And I say, screw that. Let's just be honest.
Yeah, I think that was really well said, and everyone loves someone who's had an abortion, right? Like, we know that, and we know trans and queer people have abortions, and it is often very difficult for them to access abortions, and so we need to be inclusive when we're talking about who actually has abortions and how all of these laws impact bodily autonomy. This is about our bodies and our freedoms and our personal decisions, and I'm sure everyone saw yesterday, I was talking about with my mother-in-law in the car over here, like Louisiana putting the Ten Commandments in schools. Like, what is that? What? Like, this is, so they're doing it all, and we just need to continue to push forward in our state.
All right. Thank you for that. I have another question from a Kathleen Jacob from YWCA Metropolitan Chicago. What gives you hope? What gives you hope? I see the smiles. Now I need to hear some words.
Jonah and I always think about Jonah, Dr. Fleischer, and remember one like really difficult case where it was probably a couple weeks post-Dobbs, and somehow I got your number, and I was like, please help me with this young person. You know, like, please, they're here, they need an abortion, and they can't fly back to wherever they are without it. And I don't know, you just moved mountains to get her to care, and I feel like You know, we have these relationships with each other in our state that we've been through a lot together the last couple of years. I was, you know, Emily Miller is here, and Emily and I first talked, our first conversation, we have been playing phone tag for weeks, I feel like, and I, you know, it was June 24th, 2022, and I'm, like, sitting in front of my computer, like, well, let me just try her and see if we can connect. And the minute she answered, I, like, pressed refresh on SCOTUS blog on Twitter, and the announcement had come down. And we just, like, were on the phone, just, like, our first time speaking. It was horrible, but since then, like, we have been through, like, we have had these conversations with what, how we can all work together in our state to get people to the care that they so desperately want, need, and deserve. And we're working together really well, and we're doing it. These numbers, we are doing it. We are getting people to care. We're not catching all of them, but with the support of you all, the support of the state, the support of the city, the county, up and down the state, like Sarah says, we will be able to catch more and more people. So that's what gives me hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like being on Zoom. Who's going to talk next? I hate it. I was just going to add 1,000% everything Megan said is the relationships that we have built collectively within the state among clinics, hospitals, providers, allies, funds, PAC, legislators. I mean, the list goes on. It's beautiful, especially if I have a unique perspective coming from Nebraska, which is very much, as probably many of you know, the opposite of this. And so I always think about hope because it's like, this is what could be. Illinois is truly a fantastic example for the rest of the country on what they could build. I also am not oblivious that takes decades. And with that, I think what gives me hope, even though sometimes it's hard to hold on to, is that, as Megan said earlier, Roe wasn't it. And wasn't working for decades. And we have an opportunity right now, and I think if we can harness the power and the energy of this country, we can create something beautiful that does work for everybody. So I think about just what the future looks like for my children and the generations to come, and I think that gives me hope that, like, it will be different and it will be much better.
Yeah, I would like to add that I think when we talk about hope, I don't remember who said it first, but I think of hope as a choice. That doesn't mean it's blind faith. It requires action, and that's what you've both just been talking about, and it's about choosing to believe that we can get there and looking at the evidence of how far we've come as the motivator to continue to work in all these different ways and find creative new ways to keep moving forward. And that's why I think we can.
Yeah, I mean, I think two things. I mean, don't get me wrong, we're in a really dark period. Mm-hmm. And my gut tells me it's going to get way darker. And I think that a lot of that is because our democracy is broken and that the fight, the public crisis, the health crisis we're in about abortion is really an example of how the overwhelming majority of Americans want something. Mm-hmm. And our institutions, which the extreme right wing has done so well to break, are stopping us from getting our will to be heard. Mm-hmm. And if we keep fighting and we keep pushing and we keep being the beacon, we are showing the country that we don't have to give in to this divide. And we all, and Planned Parenthood and ACLU and Equality Illinois, like, we're not in competition with each other. We're here to help these people. And more people are unfortunately going to need to come here for help. But we're showing the light that is possible in the world and so desperately needs to fix the very entrenched institutional brokenness of our democracy. Mm. And so that's what gives me hope, because we just, it's there. It's like you could see the glimmer of it, and we just have to keep moving forward towards it.
So I have one more question. This is from Marjorie Fritz Birch Self. Who can we contact to help? Y'all should be spilling it out. Yeah. Is that Ms. Margaret? Marjorie?
You said people, help with kids.
Yep.
I'm old enough. When I was in college, I got pregnant in college. I wanted to be, I had to go to Wisconsin.
Mm.
We have come full circle. I can't tell you how angry I am. We fought for this 55 years ago, 50 years ago, and we're back. I just can't believe this is happening. I would do anything I can do to help. I give to Planned Parenthood, I give to all organizations. But I'd be very interested in giving people advice, helping families need help, like here in Chicago. Who, you know, whatever you can send out information, let us do that. I'd be very interested.
Yeah. Absolutely. Let's connect. And you can always visit ChicagoAbortionFund.org. We have a really great movement building coalition that's a wonderful movement building cohort that's like a wonderful way to get plugged into the work that we're doing. And we'd love to have you join us.
Wow. We need some more Marjories.
Thank
I was
you
just
for
waiting for my
50 story.
People over here to just stand up and just be like, yeah. How can... No, I'm just joking. No, seriously, this was a very important discussion, and I'm so grateful that the City Club... I think this is the first time we're doing this here, and let's give a round of applause for that. That speaks to leadership. So I just want to highlight some things that you all said earlier and how people can get involved. And we heard a lot about, you know, it's not just about voting, but there are some action steps that folks can take. And for me, being a former healthcare worker and also a member of one of the most powerful kick-ass unions, SEIU Healthcare. I see you, Greg Kelly. I see you, brother. Those one-on-one conversations matter. Mm-hmm. We have to start having these deep one-on-one conversations. You could throw a house party, have some pizza or salad. You're vegan. I mean, I'm trying here. Okay. But you can have these little small house parties and start the conversation there. Let's not end the conversation here. There is a long road. We have a whole lot more to do. Thankful to the partnership that we have. You need some friends like Sarah, Megan, Chelsea, and Dr. Flesher. Because seriously, I mean, we're watching all of this take place. And but I want us to celebrate the things that we have done.
That's right.
Right? It's scary, but there's an urgency to get this work done. But we also have to celebrate our accomplishments. And that's what the partnership with our legislators. A lot of them are here in the room, a lot of champions here. I'm not going to call you out by name because there's too many of you, but that's a good thing, too. But then also our labor, our community leaders, and so forth. And so thank you all for having me as your moderator. It's my first time.
Thank you for doing the work because you're down in Springfield doing the hard
that's
work.
Right.
And it's yep. hard.
Couldn't do it without you. So I'm going to hand this over to Miss Jackie Ivy. Beautiful. A lot of folks up here.
So I'm biased, but we really do live in the greatest city in the greatest state.
Yes.
We just do. You know, sad for other people, but... So speaking of being biased, I want you to know, we want you to know from the City Club that we are continuing these conversations. We are continuing them in the most fair and unbiased way that we can. That means that we need you all to keep your comments coming, the positive and the negative, the good, bad, and the ugly. We're here for them. I, again, am biased and think that we have the best staff in the whole wide world, and they are here. And they work really, really hard to pull these things together. So this will not be the last, like you said, Senator, from hearing from us on this to the labor, to the healthcare workers, to the people who give people rides, to our representatives and senators. Thank you all so much for being here today. And just the plain old folks who came out to have discussion, we appreciate you. And to each one of the panelists, I don't want to forget you all. Thank you all for the discussion. And if Dan were up here, he's in the back of the room right now, but he would say there is so much more to come. So thank you all so much for being here. You guys take care for a photo.